Hey, I'm Julie Verhage Greenberg. I'm the co-founder of FinTech Today. And I am panicked about being a new homeowner and the massive spider I saw when I took my dog out two nights ago.
Cholinda, what is up, Knute?
Not much,
you
my
look
friend.
Good.
Likewise, man. You got suntan.
I'm so suntan. So I've got some rare skin condition. I do. This is fucking. I started out in life a hypochondriac, raised by wolves. My parents have destroyed me. My mom had Rumpelstiltskin disease. You know that disease where they try and kill you, your parent, but slowly.
Right.
There was a movie about it. What the hell's the name of this thing? I always forget the name of the disease. She wasn't trying to kill me, but she was trying to keep me under her control. That's what I decided. My mom was not ready to handle that news. This is breaking news.
I've never heard that one before.
I self-diagnosed my mother. And I fled. Like you fled Norway, the pogroms of Norway.
Exactly.
I fled the mom overhang.
Right.
The feeling that she was making up diseases for me. That's why I'm a hypochondriac. You got this. I got a stomachache. Oh, my God, that's Crohn's. So what is the name of that disease?
I don't know.
Bear pie. Anyways, so I don't even know what I was talking about, but it's good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
I have too much sun, even though I'm wearing like zinc and SPF 400. Obviously, I've missed a few spots, but I have some rare... I'm itchy. So I have this like arm itch, right? And it's not from a girl. It
sounds almost like TMI hair at this point.
I don't care. I'm trying to solve the puzzle as we speak. So I can't go to sleep. Like I took an Ambien the other day and I was just scratched my way through the Ambien. You know, I was like, couldn't go to sleep because I was just scratching.
Oh, that's horrible.
Oh, and so I looked it up because that's what you're supposed to do. I'm self-diagnosing. Or Ellen looked it up for me. Turns out I got some dipsy-doodle-itis type of thing from having too much sun, you know, because I bike ride and no matter what sun protection I have and golf. Yeah. So I have this condition that happens on your arms and I got to go see a doctor. Suppose I can't die from it. So unfortunately, the kids won't have access to the Robin Hood millions for a little while longer. That's changed while we were gone.
Oh, yeah.
Have I changed now that I almost have money?
Yeah. A lot.
Why?
I don't know. You're wearing the cap on forwards instead of backwards. That might be the difference.
I have the confidence to wear a cap any way I want now.
Right.
Not just the cool way. So you were in Norway. I've been traveling around Italy, San Diego, back in Phoenix here. We're going to make a bunch of shows on current topics that excite me. And there is a lot going on. We are in some as we started out, this show was called Panic with Friends. And now we have to coax people to tell us about their panic, which is kind of a new thing. We got our theme music. We ask people what they're panicked about. And it used to be when we started the show in March, people were just panicked about COVID and going broke. Now people are panicked about everything but that, it seems. And so we will delve into that as a continuing thesis here, but it is good to be back in the studio. Is Don joining us?
Not on this one.
Okay. So today I have a great guest, Julie Verhage Greenberg. And Julie is she's a journalist, but left the nest of Bloomberg, where she was doing great interviews and really interested in fintech. And her with her friend Ian, who's a friend of mine, Ian Carr, started FinTech Today, which I am a subscriber to. And, you know, what was once boring is now, as A16Z says, and I was ahead of this trend, says FinTech is everything. Everything is FinTech. I don't even know what that means. But what a great business. She's a gone from reporter, having her own business, building her own newsletter, building her own site, building her own ads, and at the same time having to report every day for users like me, because every day incredible things are happening. Robinhood today bought Say, which is a company that I was a small investor in personally. You had Square paying we're going to talk about this, Square paying $29 billion for buy now, pay later. When we were kids, Knute, it was called layaway. your parents probably did that. I don't know. Did you guys have layaway? It's like, we can't afford the Barbie. We can get you the Ken canoe because we know you like Ken more than Barbie. But the Barbie's on layaway. That's how the, you know, and but layaway back then was like, pay the whole goddamn thing and we'll give you your doll. Now, right. Buy now, pay later is merchant takes it in the yin yang up the wazoo. They run credit in real time. And it's kind of like a new form of credit card, but digital. And I've got some great stories about how it came into my life. But Julie is an expert on this subject, and what a great time to have her on. Talk about that. Neobanks, APIs, everything. And building a fintech product, which is a newsletter business in the era of the crisis. So are we ready to get her on?
Absolutely.
Julie!
Hey, nice to see you guys. How are you, Howard?
Howard's good. We're talking about Howard in the third person. Howard has a skin. I'm sure you probably have heard by now because I'm tweeting about it. I have a skin problem that's self-diagnosed, and I don't think I'm going to die. But
is it self-diagnosed or is it Google diagnosed?
Google diagnosed, and I trust Google more than anything. I trust Ron DeSantis and Google for all my medical, because Ron DeSantis says it's nothing. Put some, you got COVID? Put some Robitussin on that.
Mm-hmm.
And Google says, oh my God, you can't believe what you got. Here's everything you need to know about it. We got a link to Amazon to get my zinc creams. And haven't read the side effects yet.
And you might die in like 3 months too, because it's that Google just scares you like that.
Google makes you call a lot of doctors for opinions. And what's funny is that I don't even want to go into the show. I'm making them self-diagnose me over the phone. Get me a doctor on the phone and I'll see if I want to come in. So the world has changed. You are living where?
I'm in Austin. I moved during the pandemic.
That's exciting.
I know. It was a big thing.
And you got married during the pandemic.
I got married / eloped during the pandemic as well. Yes.
So this is, and did you meet him during the pandemic on Tinder?
No, not during the pandemic on Tinder. Although I do have friends that met people they're dating during the pandemic on dating apps. And it's like, well, like, did you decide to quarantine together or how exactly did that work?
Yeah. My daughter's watching Fuckboy Island right now. And I can say
I am too.
So that is my friend. He's on Twitter. He's super funny. He was the guy who created Bachelor. And so now he went to HBO. So Fuckboy Island, is it a show? I think there should be. I sent him a tweet the other day saying there should be a fintech Fuck Island where people like I get to go. Just the best looking men in fintech. So I included myself in the tweet.
Well, would you be a nice guy or a fuckboy though?
So what does fuckboy mean, do you think? What is, so someone is watching the show?
It's just someone that like doesn't want to commit to a relationship.
Yeah,
like,
no. Nice, that's me. 26 years, Ellen's still and I are in separate beds. But we'll get there. We're like Dick Van Dyke. We were kids of the Dick Van Dyke era. And, you know, I go, honey, if it's good for Dick, I mean, if he doesn't want to sleep with, oh my God, he doesn't want to sleep every night in the same bed as Mary Tyler Moore. What do I? Well, like, honey, come on. We should have separate beds too. Not that I'm a Dick Van Dyke type of guy. This, what are we going to talk about? So fintech today. What was the reason for the big jump for you?
So for me, I grew up on a dairy farm. So I saw parents that were very entrepreneurial running a small business. So while I loved doing something that kept me out of the office a lot, I got to meet a lot of interesting people like yourself. Mm-hmm. It was just time for me to kind of like try to do something on my own. I left March 3, 2020. So, you know, impeccable timing on my part.
Wow.
Both in a bad way and a good way. Bad way because of COVID and everything. Good way in that, as you said, like fintech has taken off like crazy the past year or two. I remember having a conversation with Bloomberg in 2017 and they're like, what's fintech? Like, why do we need someone to cover this stuff? And I was like, trust me, you need someone. Bloomberg in a way is one of the original fintech companies, right? Like they're a big Wall Street type firm trying to like make it easier for people to check bond prices, do trading and everything.
They don't even consider themselves a fintech firm, Bloomberg, you don't think?
Maybe they do now, but they like didn't back in 2017.
Yeah.
So when I left, fintech today, like the idea of it wasn't even really a thing yet. Ian, my co-founder, had started a newsletter just because he missed writing. We were both journalists.
Before you were involved, he was pitching me every day and I was like, dude, keep it simple. He was driving me nuts because Ian has Ritalin naturally created in his system.
Yeah.
He and sometimes the Ritalin isn't self-releasing, so he's all over the place. And he's got a million ideas, and I was always in his pitches. He was pitching me, and I was like, dude, it's a very simple idea. You don't need to raise a lot of money. The fintech industry is going to explode, and we need a trusted voice. So at least you got him pinned down.
I did, for the most part. There's
so two
still
marriages
kinda, like,
for you during
away.
COVID.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
The one and why is didn't you take his name? Why isn't it Julie Verhage Greenberg? Carr. What's his last name?
Carr. Yeah.
That'd be cool if you took four names. Your business partner.
I know. It'd just be the signature would get really complicated at that point. I don't have time to write that much down. That's why.
So you got married in Austin. Did you have guests?
So we still got married in New York. We did it the day after Christmas, and we had five guests plus a photographer. So it was one of my really good friends from New York, and then two of our couples that are really good friends. One of them was the officiant, and then the other ones were witnesses, and we had a photographer and stuff. It actually ended up, I'm an introvert, so it was beautiful. I loved it.
The introvert dream. Yeah. And it's weird because I'm a closet introvert. Knut, you're an introvert.
Definitely introvert, yes.
Yeah. I think most people are introverts. That's the truth of it. And that's why COVID has been, that's why people haven't complained as much about it as you would think. You know, the media would like to think that we all want to be out and about, but I think people are pretty happy. You got Trader Joe's. You've got your dog. What's your dog's name?
I have two. Pippa is the one you might hear every once in a while on here. That is my dog. She misses me right now. And Tux is the other one.
Now, is she tweeting alerts to you about the market, crypto alerts?
That's Tux, actually. So he's the fintech pooch. Our podcast is actually named after him, Tux Time, because he's all about the fintech.
Oh, good. So you've got a podcast. Mm-hmm. And thanks for inviting me on.
I did. Oh, we need to set it up yet. You're a busy guy.
Yeah. Well, you know.
I'm just going to get Knut on, actually.
Knut could tell you stories.
Oh, I got stories.
And we go way back. All right. So start a business, leave Bloomberg, COVID happens, fintech explodes. You kind of see it coming, obviously. You position yourself well, and you move to Austin. I would say you're living your best COVID life.
I am. You know, I really am. There's been its ups and downs, but if I could change anything, I don't think I would.
And these are the stories of the media. This is why I hate Bloomberg. And I don't hate the people. I hate the day-to-day shenanigans of what they feel they have to do to stay relevant as a media business.
This is the other reason. Yeah, this is the other reason I left, too.
There's not much to say, guys. Like, now they're reporting on the guy who lost $20 billion that he's in. Why does Bloomberg need to tell me that he's... And now I got all my friends talking about a story that makes... Who cares? Like, that's what Bloomberg has. It's like chum. It's like we're all fishing for great white shark. And we know what happens when you fish. 99% of the time, you're just drinking beer. And that's basically news, too. But in fintech, it's action-packed. So I want to talk about Robinhood, neobanks, APIs, and obviously BNPL. And I think I've just been reading up on BNPL because I'm like, I guess, Mike Bloomberg in one sense. I didn't believe in fintech myself. I believed in what I was investing in. I believed that people would want to trade. But what made that all possible is the Plaids, the Apexes, the DriveWells, the guts that a lot of people, Stripe, Square, all these little doohickeys. Like Square started as a doohickey and an iPhone. It's a $100 billion company. Afterpay went public at $130 million valuation in Australia. You could have bought the stock. Not that anybody goes to Australia to buy penny stocks or tech stocks, but you could have. And sells for $29 billion in plain sight. And I got to say, Marc Andreessen has a pulse like no one else, the way to spin words. And A16 says fintech, you know, everything is fintech. And, you know, someone who's cynical like myself is like, oh, please, that's got to be the top. Because I'm involved. It's like Rodney Dangerfield. If I'm in the industry and making money, this has to be the top. It's like any club that would have me. But yet here you are starting your business. So give me your, I'm biased. I think it's a bubble, not a bad bubble, just the prices, everybody doing the same thing. Everybody speaking
fintech
the same
in general
language.
Or BNPL?
I don't even understand BNPL. It just sounds like a way to make poor people poor for the sake of buying stuff.
It can be.
It's no different to me than Capital One and all the credit cards. And you'll explain to me the difference. But I had a great BNPL experience. And let me just tell you my BNPL experience. I didn't know it was BNPL. And this is how things rise in your consciousness. So I'm buying a ticket a month ago or 6 weeks ago to go to Italy, and I'm doing it when I do it. I take an Ambien. I figure it'll take me 10 minutes on Google to book the ticket. And I go through it, and it does. You know, book my tickets. I don't know, business class, so it's expensive. It's, I don't know, it's 13 grand for a couple tickets to Europe, right? And Wells Fargo, I have more than enough money in Wells Fargo. And sure enough, Wells Fargo denies me. Now it's midnight. And, you know, and Google will drop you what? And I got to go fucking restart this thing. And I'm half asleep and I'm screaming. And I don't want to call Wells Fargo because no one's going to answer.
Are you sure you didn't just dream this?
No, no, no. This is real. This is Howietown. Welcome to Howietown. This stuff happens every day. So, and I called Knut and he's not answering his phone because he won't answer the phone after midnight because he knows when I'm on Ambien and have a bad idea. So now, but a miracle happened. A digital miracle happened. So some scam of an operation, I don't even remember the name, like a god, a thing pops up. Hey, 13 equal payments. You could click this button and have 13 equal payments and we'll do the ticket. So I just clicked the button. I'm like, I'm not going to call Wells Fargo. I don't want to come back to Google tomorrow after calling Wells Fargo. I'm like, fuck, this is unbelievable. And like 2 seconds later, they loaned me the money. So basically I got 12 months of free money because I'm not going to run it. They're just, I gave them my debit account, so they're not going to make any money off me. I figure they've sold my email to like Nigeria, so I'm going to be battling Nigerian spam for the rest of my life. But other than that, they're not going to make a dime off of me. So that's my experience with BNPL. I fucking think it's great for rich people because I just got an interest-free loan hooked to my debit account so I can't even screw it up. Now, granted, I'm sure they'll try and screw me, but I can't screw it up. Fail-safe way, didn't have to call Wells Fargo. That's BNPL is phenomenal for me. I want a BNPL, a house, a boat, everything. So now you tell me what BNPL is.
It is good for, I also just used it when I bought a home and I needed to buy furniture. And Klarna, one of the other big BNPL players, was an option. So, I mean,
so were you on Wayfair or Restoration Hardware? Where were you trying?
Overstock. I could have paid for it in Bitcoin on Overstock as well, but I decided to do the other fintech option, which is BNPL.
Interesting. So you knew what the term was. You knew you were going to be BNPLing, yeah. And that's what got you excited about buying furniture?
This is what I was excited, and I didn't even know they had BNPL, but when I saw that as an option at the checkout, I was like, oh, this is perfect. Like, then I can pay this, like, $2,500 worth of furniture over the course of 4 months, interest-free, versus putting it on my credit card and having to pay it all off.
All right, so you're a crossover. You have a credit card. You know the good and the bad. Mm-hmm. It feels like the merchant's getting screwed here completely on BNPL then, because they lend you interest-free. You get the same goods. How do they, like, it doesn't hurt the merchant completely?
The merchant
used to get a little bit of a break with credit cards because they saw their money right away.
The argument is that fewer people abandon the checkout and buy more things with BNPL. So here's kind of your argument as like a good way to make poorer people poorer. There are people that buy too much stuff on BNPL because they're like, oh, I can just do it this way. That's fine.
Yeah. I mean, that's how QVC built their business. The women were shoving shit in their garage. Like, I had Rumpelstiltskin's disease, but other moms were just putting shit in their garage.
I love that you mentioned layaway earlier, though, because one of my favorite ways to think about BNPL is that it's the millennial version of layaway. Like, we don't have time to wait for shit, so we want to get it and then pay for it later versus the opposite.
Yeah, my understanding of layaway is when I watched The Jeffersons and Good Times in the 70s, and George Jefferson said, it's on layaway, bitches. Well, he didn't say bitches, but, you know, it was a very racist show. So, you know, JJ's mom or whoever JJ's mom said would get him a gift on layaway. But layaway back in Good Times era meant you weren't getting shit until the whole thing was paid off. You are getting your furniture mañana, right? Yep. So it's different
than
layaway.
The only way during the pandemic that you ended up paying part of it before you actually got it is that Peloton bikes were on such back order that you'd often have a couple of payments before you actually got the bike.
Which is why I kept canceling my Peloton. It's like, unless you can deliver it in a month. Like, I'm not cheap, but I know a scam when I see one. No, I was literally canceled my Peloton 3 times, like, if it was over a month. And I finally got one, and I love it. It really is to live in my world, unfortunately. It's just a dark, weird place with a lot of
But the funny thing
calls.
Is, if we would have referred to BNPL even just, like, 3 months ago, people
would not have known what it meant.
I remember even the first time I wrote about it, like for our newsletter for FinTech Today, I wrote about it at Bloomberg before. But I remember telling Ian, like, hey, this is what I'm going to write about on Sunday or whatever day it was. He's like, what's BNPL? This was only like 6 months ago.
This is
going to
be a $1 trillion industry.
Yeah.
Or at least, it's crazy. I don't know if it's ever going to return that. But I mean, they pay $29 billion. Apple and Goldman are going to team up. Klarna is probably $100 billion. You've got a few other big players. The company that gave me my flight ticket was not one of the names that I've heard of. So I didn't even have any. Yeah. I don't think Klarna. It was some other weird name. It was like Frank's.
There's like QuadPay and like a bunch of other ones too. Yeah.
Yeah. Mine was like George's BNPL. I got like a I got a euro and 12 months and my flight to Europe. But so this is how the world works now, right? Because media is not trusted for good reason, in my opinion, is because they have to do 24 hours of nonsense to get to one kernel. But the way stuff rises, it's everything's become TikTok, right? So it's like with FTX, and we can talk about that. Like, I hadn't heard of FTX. Then I got a call from Sina like 6 months ago, and I'm supposed to know what's going on in the industry. I hadn't even heard of this company. And then you slowly, it gets in your consciousness, and then you just start, oh my God. So BNPL is, it's like Bitcoin in a way, in the sense that like over, it's not an overnight success. The whole idea of BNPL, once you hear it 100 times, you're like, motherfucker, that's just digital version of layaway with a few other extra tricks.
I wonder if you could pay for your BNPL in Bitcoin. Like, that feels like something Jack Dorsey will do now.
That's
that
so interesting, because then you would have paid less if Bitcoin goes up. Super
right,
interesting
and
idea.
Vice versa. Yeah.
Yeah, because I have a friend that I'm doing a documentary with. Really interesting. And I'm going to have him on the show, Chris Knut at Optimus. I made the intro to him. So I backed a documentary, but he's doing a second documentary about Ethereum, and they raised a crowdfunding. Fred blogged about blah, blah, blah. So their second movie, which is a year and a half away, about Ethereum, raised $1 million in ETH. And so he was like, didn't call anybody. This goes to the investor generation of what we can talk about too after BNPL. Is like, he's so excited to get funded, he immediately converts his Ethereum into cash. And Ethereum was at $1,900 3 weeks ago when he did it. And if he had just done like a 10-month or 12-month liquidity, you know, an equal amount, like Ethereum's at $3,000. He would have double the budget in 3 months. And so, yes, you are correct. Square would be nuts not to do BNPL where you could let it ride. I mean, it sounds a little hairy, but I think they're going to try that.
There is one fintech company called Metromile that's going to start letting users pay their insurance premiums with Bitcoin.
Well, that's
so
done well. Their stock's doing well on that news, down to $5 on that news. That's a whole nother
Ironically,
SPAC
though,
story.
They were debating on not doing it just because they're like, oh, regulators won't like this. But then California wanted to be more like Florida. And they're like, oh, we love this idea. You should totally do this. We want to be like the mayor of Miami that wants to be like pro Bitcoin. Oh, yeah. Pro crypto or anything like that. So it's actually really fun to follow. I'm interested. No one's actually going to do it. It's just a really good PR stunt, right?
It's a PR stunt in a bull market. What happens when these things drop 80% now? Instead of owing 1,000, you owe 1,800 for the couch. So listen, I'm of the opinion, and this is America being America, is like when I was younger, and I'm 55, and you're what, 30?
Yes.
Okay, so I'm 55. That was a, I could be an age guesser, Knut. Just a podcast
amazing.
Guess. That was a podcast guess. She just sounds 30, and you're wise for a 30-year-old. But when I was a kid, I think I'm going to forget what I was going to say. you went to school. Knut and I went to school first day, and we were at like the quad where everybody hangs out. And literally, you were harassed by Capital One, Amex. You couldn't help but have $100,000 of credit. Right? Like, and so what did we do? Go to Vegas. Like, what did we spend our money on? Vegas, clothes, badass stereo.
And beer.
And beer. And no, those drinks that might give you a head rush. What are those?
Those freezy ones.
No, but I'm saying, like, I was $60,000 in debt, right? Even though my parents were helping me with school, I just ran up my capital. So I had like Nordstrom. And so I think my kids not growing up with credit is a demotivator. I think credit was a humongous motivator, forgetting the debt and the trouble that it's caused. And I'm only speaking to my, it motivated the shit out of me to owe Capital One $60,000 and write those minimum checks every month and know they were gouging me. But that motivated me to earn more. This generation, good or bad, we'll find out in history. My son lives, he goes, I'm short $3. Can you Venmo me $3? They don't know what debt is. They don't want a credit card. So I guess the world has come up with a version of this that will create debt for the next generation. So in a way, it could be a great motivating factor, but we know what's hidden behind here, as I feel, is the Jeffersons and good times, is that the wrong people are going to rack up debt. What are they really buying? So that's kind of my feel on the whole thing.
There is a good side of BNPL, though, in that there's so many people, immigrants and others, that it's so hard for them to actually establish credit, that if we start allowing them to do things, BNPL is often the only option for them in many cases, unless they want to pay for it entirely up front. So if you started letting them use BNL to actually create a credit score, I feel like that's a good thing, though.
It's the greatest thing. No, I'm saying like it's a motor. It's going to be used poorly by the wrong people. But for someone like me, it was a great feature to get around Wells Fargo. This is why I hate Wells Fargo.
Isn't
they're not even
the
having to do their job. A bank's one job is to measure what's in my account and either call me. They should call me, not just blanket deny. This is what pisses me off about the fintech world that we live in. Wells Fargo gets another free pass, right? They didn't do their job as my bank. I had to go outside my bank to get the deal that they should be offering me, even though I had the cash in the bank. And Wells Fargo should be offering me BNPL, as a customer should be saying, hey, Howard, why waste 13 grand today? You have the money in your account. Treat yourself to 13 payments as our customer. Like everything that you could do wrong, Wells Fargo did wrong in that transaction. So this is why I hate that they've survived. We don't need them.
So I'm going to flip this on you a little bit, though, too. There is another company that you invested in that is called Robinhood that I also feel like helps people make poor decisions. So do you think that
you're treading on very dangerous water now? No, I'm kidding. So yeah, so they help me come.
I like treading on dangerous water with you, though. I can do that with you.
Yeah, so keep going. So they help people. You're comparing Robinhood to Wells Fargo. That's a stretch.
Not Wells Fargo.
That's not a good segue. You could compare it to some evil things.
BNPL. Your argument is that BNPL helps people make poor decisions.
Correct.
I argue that Robinhood also helps people make poor decisions, yet you also invested in Robinhood. Was it that you don't think that's true, or you?
No, great question. So this is the question that I would hope Bloomberg would have asked me, and I would have answered it like this. In 2013, when I invested in Robinhood, here's what my choices were. Schwab, Vanguard, Betterment, Wealthfront. Hated all the choices, right? And as someone who started StockTwits and wanted Twitter to do all this and to be an open Bloomberg, I thought like with App Store, we're going to have an open Bloomberg. So that be in 2013 and have my choices limited still to $8 commissions. I didn't even care about the commission, to be honest. It was all about the UI and all about the fact that I thought robo-advisors were a ripoff. Right? They weren't 10 times better than Vanguard. So let's go back to 2013. I'll tell you why I invested. Who would have thought that it'd be worth $40 billion? Not me. I'm not that smart. So when I invested, it was based on the fact that I believed that that last mile, like the way Quest or back in the day, World Global Crossing, that last mile needed to come down to zero. Robinhood and people before it that failed. There was a desktop version backed by Skype. I forget the name of it. But everybody was holding on to that last $8. Why? Because Schwab had a $1 billion marketing budget with their team and everything committed, you know, a year ahead. So you had all these people within these brokerages protecting their own jobs all around this lousy $8. And as technology does, it just said, fuck the $8. So that's why I invested. If you had told me that they would have this type of PR nightmare that's so off point, but maybe on point, like so off point as an investor at the early stage that did its job. Yeah. So if you said, Howard, what do you feel like today? And I would say, yeah, of course it's a gaming product. And of course options are dangerous. But when I invested, we didn't have FINRA approval, SEC approval. We just had an app with a UI. And could we get people to trade? Because you remember, you had hundreds of millions of dollars going into what I thought were terrible ideas that I was passing on the robo-advisors. And sure, Betterment may get through the other side. I mean, they are through, and some cop and Wealthfront gets through to the other side. But are they VC investments?
They won't be $40 billion.
Correct. Yeah, are those VC investments? I feel like, yeah, I did my job. I kept my investors out of dumb VC ideas, and I picked a good VC idea. And by the way, when I was writing that check in 2013, people thought I was nuts, right?
I will say, you make fun of Betterment and Wealthfront. I do have my 401k at Betterment now that I left Bloomberg. It is so much freaking better than
the traditional.
Of course it
is, but is it 10 times better for the company? They're never going to make money.
No, I'm just saying, if
so
there's someone on here that can
use
your 401k.
Yes, it's a great UI that Vanguard should have done themselves.
Yes.
So kudos to Betterment and Wealthfront. Totally get it. But as someone who wanted to see the future, and my job is to bet on the future, I believed that the 1999, and we're working on a documentary about this, the Yahoo Finance, Street.com era ended. It ended because of the banks and businesses without business models. But retail wanted to try investing. We want choice, you know. Of course, there's Dairy Queen that has vanilla. But guess how old that feels? You go into a Dairy Queen, it feels like 1940. Because if you only offer vanilla, you don't have to invest in anything else. And so that works for Warren. But it's a perfect Warren Buffett company because everything about him is 1940. He hasn't shaved. He doesn't believe in anything. He believes in not upgrading his See's candy stores with four flavors and his Dairy Queen that has one flavor. But Americans wanted choice. And if you want to compete on choice, you got to take risk. And with that comes Robinhood, the good, the bad, the ugly. The stuff that you talk about, I only use Robinhood to watch my list as a proxy for other portfolios. So I use it the way I think it should be used. You're and the media and other people make a great point that it's gamified. I can't comment on that because I'm not a gamer. But if we flash back to E-Trade and Schwab circa 1999 and their Super Bowl commercials and light it up, and where the guy's teaching his boss how to day trade, and where E-Trade had a baby trading from their crib. We can call Robinhood, and Scott Galloway is just doing a horrific job covering this, so is CNBC, because they're just, and he's conflicted. They're not mentioning their conflicts. But what I'm saying is, let's go back to 1999, and I will tell you that Robinhood is 1,000 times better than the 1999 versions of Robinhood, which is what? Mm-hmm. Post 99, Schwab buying Options Express, they all bought companies that added features that were like running a nuclear test site on your portfolio. That the bells and the whistles and the bleeps and the blinking. So this gaming and trading have been around since the beginning. It is a game. You want to take your account and go from lower left to upper right. You want to take your account from 100 and go to 10,000. Now, there's a million ways to play the game. There's a million ways to get to 10,000. And along the way comes thousands of landmines. And those landmines are, you know, the companies that are getting in your way. And so, yeah, is Robinhood the same company that I invested in? No. So, you know, but I think the media needs to have context for when these things were started, what the environment was like when they were started, and what the environment we are in today. And I think it's up to Robinhood now. They're big enough and they now have all the lawyers to like kind of work with the public and see what they want. Now it's up to competitors to go in and fix the problems that they have. I think payment for order flow is the discussion going in the wrong direction, as a lot of our discussions are. Is if you want fractional ownership and you want participation in the industry, you need to give people access, and payment for order flow is one of those costs of doing business. What's your take?
I agree. And I mean, the thing that really always stands out to me on a payment for order flow is that you'll talk to two really smart people that understand it really well, and they'll have different opinions. One will think it's really bad. One will think it's really good. The grand scheme of things, any of these traders that are on Robinhood, they might be sacrificing like half a penny on a trade. That's still way less than the commission that you'd be paying otherwise.
And it's, you see it instantly in your account. Like, I mean, the point is, there's no trickery. There's no like 900 screens. Do the math.
I don't know why we're focused on this rather than just like financial education.
So there's the question. So my main beef with Robinhood as a user is every time I click on and I love Benzinga, and whatever. And I have no beef with media around this. There is no reason that any investor inside the Robinhood app needs to see this content. It should all be educational. Before you click here, maybe you should know this about the company. Like really, and I think that's where we're going, and it's up to Robinhood to win this or competitors. And this is, I call it the Google Maps era of investing. You know, if, you know, right turn, left turn. I think we are finally hitting the scale that enough, everybody's focused on like, do more trading. And I see so many pitches about that. I want less trading. I want you to tell me why I shouldn't do this. And I think the companies that can help people do less and get to 10,000 from 100 in a do less way, it could be billion-dollar companies. They're not going to be sexy VC businesses, but that's what I want to get pitched. Not I'll go fucking trading. I want to get pitched, you bought a great company. Why are you doing this? You know what I mean? Like, so I agree with you 100%. Yeah. Everything should be about right turn, left turn, education. So we agree.
Yes, we do.
Robinhood, with great privilege comes great responsibility. It's up to them. It's theirs to drop the ball now. But the media lost the point.
Speaking of traders, you mentioned this FTX thing, and I'm sitting here because I'm like, shit, I haven't heard of FTX. What is this? It's a crypto derivatives exchange.
Correct.
That sounds terrifying.
And it is. And that's why I didn't hear about it, because I don't trade derivatives. But in a world, the world is bigger than the U.S. border. So this is a big controversy. I've had him on my podcast. Sam's been in the press, I don't know, for the last 6 months daily. But he built a derivatives exchange over in Hong Kong. They also have FTX.us, which is no different than opening up a Coinbase or Robinhood account. Pretty boring. You can't do derivatives. But in a world, this is what I say about fintech. And this is, so I've told you two of my areas that I'm focused on. One, education. One will be content. Not sexy, but I think Robinhood's got such a big moat because the incumbents or the VCs did such a bad job of creating a lift to their Uber that I'm scared of investing in the next Robin. Even though I get pitched the next Robinhood 1,000 times, I'm like, do you know what you're going to have to go through to get to their scale? You know how many billions you're going to have to raise to compete? Like, Robinhood's one of those rare, you know, I call it a digital rare asset where everybody screwed up. Whereas we can bitch all we want about Robinhood, but it ain't going anywhere. It's like Spotify. Mm-hmm. No matter what they bring at it, it has scale, it has network effects, and it has regulation moat now because they've paid the man and they're willing to continue to pay the man. And now they have the public markets to defend them and do acquisitions. So I think in a world where Robinhood is just going to accelerate, I really do start thinking about this convergence of private and public markets and how do we, and this is where FTX and derivatives come in. You know, when someone says derivatives, you think negative, but I'm in this issue, like when there's a lot of public companies and a lot of stuff happening in the public markets, there's a lot of stuff happening in the private markets. There's this middle area where you're almost public, right? And the employees have been there 5 years and they can't afford to buy a house because their stock's not trading. And you're like 6 months away, hopefully, if the market stays together after the lockup, of you being able to be rich. So I think there's this like gray middle area that should be way more liquid, but isn't. And that's something that I, as a VC, want to focus on. I know it's only 6 months or a year. Like, you're so close to being, there's nothing worse than being close to being somewhere. You know, in the movie Jaws, I talk about it all the time. It's like Robert Shaw, they're talking about, you know, they were in water filled with sharks and, you know, the four nights go by and it was hell. But he said the scariest part is when the helicopters got there because they were waiting for their turn and they were so close to being saved. What a horrific time to be worrying about the sharks. And I think that's the next phase. You talk about this derivatives. We have to come up as a country and as regulators as a way for the almost rich. And by almost rich, I mean people that work really hard are worth the American dream. They're worth 1 to 10 million on paper. I know, you know, the numbers are staggering, but that's real money to a lot of people in the tech industry, and they have no access to it. And so they make bad decisions. They switch jobs. They go to a company that has more risk. The media is portraying as Uber's evil and this is evil. No, the system's not working because companies stop going public. And who pays for that? The general public. Mom probably wants to buy their first house or a boat or keep the economy going, but their money's locked up in the system. And I think the FTXs of the world, if the U.S. government can start educating themselves and talking non-hysterically about the FTXs of the world and what derivatives can do for people, if used properly, is where we need to go to bridge that final gap. So that's my sermon on that. Does that make sense?
I liked it.
Does that make sense?
I enjoyed your TED Talk.
And so for FTX, they're caught in the loop, right? They're hated by the U.S. regulators. So he's stuck in Hong Kong. You know, they're worried about giving people derivatives to trade. Meanwhile, we've got Robinhood offering daily and weekly auctions, and Elon Musk promoting Dogecoin. So I'm saying, like, we're not doing our job. Like, it's a lot of blathering, but meanwhile, the SEC has no teeth. You got Barstool Dave day trading and acting like a lunatic, and CNBC embracing him. You have Elon Musk care less what the SEC thinks. And we've got our best financial minds heading overseas. So I think that's a really big problem. What are you seeing around that at FTT?
Around people leaving the U.S. or what part in particular?
Well, just fintech in general. Are you seeing more outside the U.S. and what do you, what's your take?
I am. I don't know if it's necessarily people like leaving the U.S., but you are seeing like Nubank is looking at going public now, and that's a challenger bank based in Latin America, heavily in Brazil. I believe they're in Mexico, maybe one other area now as well. Their growth has been just like phenomenal down there because the banking system is so different there than what it is in the U.S., where in the U.S., like, it's pretty easy for people to get a bank. They might be underserved by it a bit, but it's not that hard. In Latin America, it's way different. There's a huge population that's underbanked and or not banked at all, yet they also have mobile phones. So that's just a recipe for a challenger bank to come in and do really well, right? Same thing with Africa and India. I'm seeing a ton of stuff happen right now too, from payments to, you know, business payments to car financing, everything. It feels like those are two areas where I'd be shocked if there's not a lot of VC firms currently raising funds to dedicate just to those areas, because I think there's a ton of stuff happening over there.
And VCs are, I think it's going to be up to the U.S. companies. Do they buy, compete, wait? Like, you know, Square will do acquisitions there. Robinhood, they announced an acquisition day. But I think the U.S. can win this global battle. It's just, I don't know where the regulators, you know, pan out. So on a daily basis, you're running this business. What does a fintech today day look like for an entrepreneur like yourself, journalist, entrepreneur? What does a day look like?
The nice thing, every day is fairly different, but what I'd say like my favorite part is we have people do guest posts for us. Some of them are regular guest posters, like Charlie Ma, one of Plaid's first employees.
Yeah.
He's amazing. You should follow him on Twitter and then follow our newsletter on there. But people like that, because I mean, you and I could riff on this for a long time too. I feel like the future of quote unquote media is more so newsletters, not even written by journalists, but written by operators, people that are in this system that are super trustworthy and people want to follow along with.
Yep.
So that's my favorite part, because every single time I edit one of his posts, one of John's posts, Jenny's posts, I learn so much.
So you're saying I could write for you and you would at least edit it? Because I hate writing more than three paragraphs. Okay, I'll do that.
I edit Ian. I can edit you.
That should be your tagline for growth. Just a picture of Ian, like a 30-second TikTok. Oh, I fix this guy. I can fix you. All right, so you wake up, you calm Ian down, but then what happens? What's it like? What do you read? How do you go through? How do you curate? What do you decide the topic
is? So this is the reason FinTech Today is such a good thing, is like we kind of curate everything. Because for me, I have to go to so many different sites, Bloomberg, correct, TechCrunch, CNBC, Reuters, whoever, to try to figure out what's going on, the information, like FinExtra, everything.
Mm-hmm.
So just like reading through, finding out what is important, what isn't important. And we have a Slack community where anyone that's one of our premium subscribers comes into and just like riff on there, see what's going on, what people are interested in. There's people that'll post and they're like, hey, I'm hiring for a certain role. Does anyone know someone that's interested? Or, hey, we've got this product coming out. Does anyone have an expert we can talk to on APIs or BNPL, whatever it might be?
Mm-hmm.
So just kind of like staying up to date on everything that's happening, which doesn't sound like a lot, but there's so much going on that you just have to constantly be reading and talking to people on top of trying to figure out like which areas FinTech Today should focus on. And as you said, honing Ian in on what we need to do.
Well, you're doing great. So I trust you to do my curating. So, and I'm going to let you do your Robin Hood spiel because I interrupted you, because I can take it. But it's how much a month? How do people find you?
Yeah. So the website is fintechtoday.co. There's a free newsletter that has all the news automation for you. But if you want access to the expert commentary and the Slack community, that is $25 a month. Mm-hmm. And you can sign up on the website as well there too. Howard, it looks like you open most of our newsletters. I looked. It's around 75% you open. I appreciate
that's
that.
Creepy, but yeah, I do that. I'm canceling my subscription. Canoe, what is this? There's another Rumpelstiltskin thing going on here. Here's what I do. I've just decided to trust you, and that's why I'm building a relationship with you, having it on the pod, and I'll come on yours. It's like, man, I don't know what I'm doing. Okay, like people now think I know what I'm doing because I got a few things right. You know what I mean? That's the joke of it. Is like
no one ever really knows what they're doing. They're just like staying one step ahead.
Correct.
That's the biggest thing I've learned. The Robinhood founders just try to stay one step ahead. The Stripe founders just try to stay one step ahead.
Correct. People think they gotta like act like they know it all, and that's the biggest turnoff for me. Is that that's a lie. I know the Robin Hood guys. I know them when they got drunk at Stucktoberfest and they passed out. It's like they didn't know about the SEC and FINRA. They got a fucking world class education now, and you may not like them, but you know they have a responsibility and they're getting their ass kicked. So yes, they're billionaires. I get it. That's how the U.S. works these days. You know. So I think this is why I talk about the Peloton. It's like. I rely on FTT as long as you're there to curate, give me non-bias, just educate me on this because BNPL, no, nobody was a genius. Otherwise, the thing wouldn't have had to go public in Australia at $130 million valuation a few years ago. This is a fucking phenomenon that caught just like TikTok. So you have these incredible business hacks, whether it was Square as a dongle in your iPhone when iPhone had the hole. You know what I mean? Like these holes open and close. It's like the solar system. There's these vortexes that are there for a minute. And if you don't run like Mach 2, you may hit a wall. I was like, yesterday we brought our dog home. She hasn't been to Phoenix in a while. And I don't know, my daughter wasn't being mean. She opened the screen door because it's 700 degrees, let the dog out, closed the screen door. And the dog, not used to seeing the screen door, came in at Mach 2 to the door and ricocheted off. I'm the only one that saw this. But like I'm saying, the dog is used to this hole being there and the hole closed.
That would have been a good TikTok, actually.
So I'm saying like... These moments in time in the FTXs and the BNPLs and the Squares and the Robinhoods, there's these holes that open up. And because of the cloud and because of the connectivity of the world, these explosions happen. And because of the speed at which these things happen, good luck putting a neat bow on these things. I explain Robinhood that way. It's like, okay, put yourself in my position. You probably wouldn't have made the investment because it was over, you know, you didn't believe in trading. I get it. But for someone like myself who believed in trading and to be able to express myself through an app, that's what I did. You know, Robinhood testifying in front of Congress, I have no opinion. I'm just a happy investor. And I've become their customer support line. People just shit on me all day on the internet asking for my opinion about a $40 billion company. And I'm like, you didn't like my opinion when they were an $8 million startup. So what's the point of me, you know, waylaying your concerns at $40 billion? You know, I'm underqualified to answer these questions. And I think people need to take these baby steps and follow people that are one, two steps ahead. You don't need to be 50 steps ahead. So go to FTT. Now tell me the Robinhood stuff. I'll let you uninterrupted explain me your take on all this.
My take on Robinhood, you know what? Good for Vlad and Baiju on building a massive company. I think, like I said, payment for order flow should not be the concern. I have zero issue with Robinhood getting paid for payment for order flow. The issue I have is that it should not be that easy for people to trade options and other stuff like that on the platform. Financial education needs to be such a huge priority, which I hope you're right that they're starting to focus on that a bit more. I'll believe it when I see it, but I think that's the only way that you actually fix that kind of stuff versus the payment for order flow. That has zero impact.
Oh, so two things. Hysterically, you have Galloway and you have Barstool, Dave. Their hysterical point of view, and it's a fucking comedy because they're fucking promoting themselves and not disclosing that they have invested in competitors, that Vlad and Baiju should be in jail. So there's the one end. The other end of the spectrum is like freedom. Ron DeSantis, whoever would say freedom, is like, this is the way it is. And Robin Hood better be careful, but like we're leaving them alone. And then there's you and I in the middle saying, you know, listen, with this great power comes responsibility. Weekly auctions are stupid. I've never traded them. And if I do, I do one lot just to fucking, you know, blow my brain out of $600 or $1,000. You're not going to make money doing it. And what you get, and I pay the penalty, there's a tax on all this. You know what the tax is? It's AMC and GME experts that actually made money for all the wrong reasons. Mm-hmm. And they are on stock that's polluting my life that I have to clean up. So we all pay a tax for Robinhood. My tax is fucking shenanigans in Wall Street bets. You know what I mean? Everybody's become an expert. And they're dumping. So I think people forget that there are taxes out there that I do pay. Not that I'm defending myself, but I'm saying this is the kind of stuff I hate Robin Hood type people for, is they want all this responsibility and they want to be able to take a shit in the streets and they don't want to have to clean it up and they don't want to be able to get kicked off and free speech this and free speech that. So I think it's Robin Hood's just one of those companies that fits into the, you know, that category of we got this great toy and 90% of people are using it correctly, and the 10% that are using it poorly are an abomination on all things financial, and they are going to blow up eventually, and then they're going to hate on Vlad and Baiju, and they're going to hate on the system, and those are going to be the people that are the swing voters at some point. So, you know, I appreciate your insights there. I got to have you back, because we didn't get into neobanks and APIs, but thanks on the BNPL. It's an amazing time for people like yourself. Like, you can move to the middle of the country, you get on a furniture site, you do BNPL, you're responsible, you know, working for yourself, start your own business. And BNPL is a great service for someone like yourself.
Yep.
All righty. And don't worry about being panicked about your house. You did the right thing. As for spiders, they're fucking terrible. So, you know, do what you can to get rid of spiders. And, but congrats on buying your first home. The panic is a normal feeling. And that's life. That's the American dream, to have that type of, that's a panic. That's a very American type of panic. That's kind of a luxury. So try and enjoy the ride.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate it. And we need to get you on our podcast too.
Okay. Talk to my people.
All right.
That's me.
Oh, it's Canoe. Don't call after midnight. All right, kiddo. See you, Julie.
Bye. Thank you, guys.
Smart.
Very.
And she let me get, she teed up some stuff that I wanted to talk about. I interrupted her, but she'll be a regular. Because fintech is now everything. And
it really is.
That she left Bloomberg for this, you know, took some risk and did this.
Good for her.
Anyways, we're back.
We are.
You are listening to Panic with Friends. It's me and Knut and some new people coming in to share the mic with us. But we talk to great investors, entrepreneurs, thinkers on topics, and just try and stay, like Julie said, they're one step ahead. We don't need to be 100 steps ahead. So consistently being one or two steps ahead and deciding when to drop back into the pack and ride on other people's drafts versus taking the lead when you know something and bringing the people forward on your back. That's our job as thinkers and investors. So hopefully you enjoy. You can find us Apple, Spotify. Just search my name, Howard Lindzen, or Panic with Friends. And we've got, I don't know, 100 and how many episodes?
In the 60s somewhere.
We try and keep them evergreen. We don't try and talk about trading in this moment in time unless there's a panic. But we try and keep them evergreen. So treat yourself. You can go back to some great interviews on some great topics. Have a great day. Talk to everybody next week.
Howard Lindzen is the founder and general partner at Social Leverage. All opinions expressed by Howard and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of Social Leverage or StockTwits. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon for decisions. Guests may maintain positions and securities discussed in this podcast.